Madam Chair, Caitlin Snyder, Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. First, I just wanted to touch on the 10 Minnesota commitments to equity. These are the commitments to equity that the department has identified as priorities for us in our work, identified through our values and behavior framework. So today, sorry about that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Caitlin Snyder with the Minnesota Department of Education, and just highlighting the 10 commitments to equity that the department has highlighted in our work. Today, some of the items that we're going to touch on is following the money, measuring what matters, and then starting with it. The department was asked to present on a summary of large non-competitive grants in Minnesota, Food and Nutrition, ESSA, and IDEA. My colleague Andre Prahl will speak to those items. We were also asked to present on competitive grants that are funded from the federal government through the Minnesota Department of Education, including Race to the Top Preschool Development Grant, Birth Through Five. My colleague Bobby Burnham will speak to those, and I will finish up the presentation touching on the other competitive grants.
Madam Chair, Andre Prahl,
welcome to the committee.
Finance Director. First, I wanted to point out that there is a document in your packet, a federal funds summary, and this addresses one of your questions about the amount of federal money that comes into the agency. This is a document that we prepare every biennium that's part of the biennial budget packets that you guys all get at some point. I revised it slightly for this presentation. The changes I made are on the far left. I added in the column whether or not it was a competitive grant or not. If it doesn't say competitive, it's not. I also added a few bullets under the descriptions to give a little bit more detail on exactly what the funds are spent on, like admin or grants to school districts. And last thing, I pulled out only state fiscal year 19 and the FTEs. And the reason I did that is because this presentation is going to focus on state fiscal year 17 budgeted expenditures and FTEs. Okay. So the first slide is about food and nutrition services. This is one of our larger non-competitive grants. For state fiscal year 19, we're projecting to spend $318,100,000 and fund 55 FTEs through these six or five programs that are listed on there. The first one is National School Breakfast, Lunch, and Milk Programs. Those are for school-age children. This is considered an uncapped entitlement program, which means the schools are entitled to this funding. And every reimbursement that they send in to us for reimbursement, as long as it's qualified, will be reimbursed regardless of the amount of money that we are planning on getting that year. So it's kind of like an open appropriation. They'll give us whatever we need to fund those meals. So for those programs, we are planning to spend about $227,500,000 in 19. The Fresh Fruits and Vegetables Program provides afternoon snacks during the school. We plan on spending about $3,261,000, and we fund one FTE with that. Our Summer Food Program supports nonprofit food service programs for low-income children during the summer and other approved times. So, for example, when we're off for vacations or holidays, spring break, things like that, it's about $11 million and one FTE. The next one is child and adult care food programs. This is for funding for children and adults who are in non-residential daycare facilities or children attending after-school programs in low-income areas or emergency shelters. It's about $70 million, $500,000, and we support about 11.5 FTEs.
Ms. Burnham, just one question. Yeah. I'm just trying to find the correlation between the points that you're going over here and where we find them on the graph of federal fund summary.
Okay, Madam Chair. This document, you're right, I lumped a bunch of these together. So how to tell you which one? They're all on here. The first section of your document, of the document, is shaded gray. These are all of the Department of Agriculture grants, so it's all the of the Food and Nutrition Services ones. So you would have to look through them. For example, the third one down on the first page is breakfast. So breakfast is $53,313,000. The lunch program is right underneath that one. That's $173,455,000. What I did on the slide is I just kind of lumped the like programs together.
Thank you. We just needed to know how to where to find those. Thank you very much. Please continue.
Okay.
Oh, excuse me. There is a question. Senator Klassen.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. I believe some of these programs are being affected by the current federal shutdown. Could you comment on that as far as which programs? And then secondly, when do we have to start worrying about the funds will stop?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Senator, for the question. That's a great question. Luckily, overall education programs are funded. You're correct that food and nutrition programs are funded through a bill that's not currently in effect at the moment. So the Department of Education has been working with MMB to identify what this means in practice for our schools. And the best information that you could get would be if you were to direct this question to my colleague, John Pollard at MMB, and I can connect you with him after this.
Thank you. All right, continue, please, with your presentation.
Okay.
Ms. Burnham.
The last bullet on there is the administration of the above program. So we get a separate grant of about $5.7 million in fiscal year 19, and we fund about 41.6 FTEs to administer those programs. The next slide is about the ESSA, which is the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. These you also might recognize as our title programs. So I listed each of them. Each slide has the title programs on there. The first one, well, overall for ESSA, we're projecting to spend in fiscal year 19 over $246 million, and that's going to fund about 47.5 FTE. So Title I, and so these are going to be a little bit more difficult to find in this document because they're in the second section that's not shaded. It's in the white section. These are the Department of Education grants. The titles are the same, so you will find them in there. They're just not, they're, again, I lumped them together. But Part A of Title I is improving teacher and teaching and learning in high-poverty schools. The program provides competitive sub-grants to local education agencies. And we spend that money specifically, we provide school improvement grants, we use admin money, and we also provide technical assistance to the schools. Part B is state assessments. We use this money to pay for the cost of developing those standards and the high-quality assessments that are required of Title I in ESSA. That's the testing. So a big chunk of this is the contract, testing contract. Part C is migrant education. This is used to help ensure that migratory children have the opportunity to meet the same challenging state content and performance standard as other children do. We use this money for admin. We also have an IT component of this that we use, or I'm sorry, PT contracts where we do needs assessments. And we also obviously provide grants. Part D is neglected and delinquent. We use this money to provide educational continuity to children and youth in state-run institutions and in adult correctional institutions so that when they leave those institutions, they can transition either into work or school. This money is used for admin, and it's also used, we provide there's a contract, interagency contract to the Department of Corrections for their neglected and delinquent program. ESSA continued, so the dollar amount on the top is for all of ESSA. Title II, we spend about $28.6 million and fund 11.6 FTEs in fiscal year 19. This money is used to support effective teaching, effective instruction state grants to improve quality and effectiveness in teachers. We use this money, we provide technical assistance to school districts. We also provide grants, as it states up there, and there is some admin funding to this as well. Title III is English language acquisition grants. That's about $9.8 million. We fund about 3 FTE. This money is used to help ensure that English learners attain English proficiency and meet the same challenging state academic content as other children are expected to meet. This money is used for admin. We provide technical assistance to schools. We also have minute services contracts. We provide a parent notification portal software system. We fund with that, and there's also grants to school districts. The next slide is Title V. Title V has Part A and Part B. Title V, we are projecting to spend about $20.4 million and fund 6.7 FTEs. Part A of Title IV is for student support and academic enrichment. This is to improve students' academic achievement by increasing the capacity of states and local educational agencies. They use it to improve technology and provide access to a well-rounded education. Part A, we spend about $6.6 million in fiscal year 19 is what we're projecting. We use this money for admin, funding, grants to school districts are the other thing. Part B is 21st century. We spend about $13.8 million in fiscal year 19 to support local after-school, before-school, and summer learning programs in high-poverty and low-performing school areas. Again, we use this money for admin. We provide technical assistance to those entities and grants. The last of the ESSA slides is Title V and Title VII. Title V is rural and low-income schools. We provide, that's $353,000 and just under a half of an FTE. We use this to provide assistance to rural districts to carry out activities to help improve the quality of teaching and learning in schools. Again, this is used for admin and grants to school districts. Title VII, this is our homeless grant. You might recognize it as the McKinney-Vento Homeless Act. We spend about, or planning to spend about $1 million. I see there's a typo on that slide. And two FTEs will be funded with this money. We use this money to ensure that all homeless children and youth have equal access to the same free, appropriate public education available to other children. Again, we use this for administration. There's some technical assistance involved and also grants. Lastly, we've got the IDEA, also known as special education. There's three main components to these grants. They're also going to be in the white section, the second section of the Department of Education grants. The first one is children with disabilities, also known as Part B. We use this money to assist state and school districts in providing special education and related services to all children and youth, and this is specifically for ages 3 through 21, or 3 to 21 with disabilities. It's 196, almost 97 million, and there's 84 FTE. And when we say FTE, it's multiple people across. These funds especially go across most of the divisions within MDE. Early childhood special education preschool grants is Part B or Section 619, if you're familiar with that, to assist in providing special education and related services to children with disabilities. This is for ages 3 through 5. It's about $8 million a year and 6.3 FTEs. Lastly, we've got early childhood special education and grants for infants and families. This is also called Part C. We use this to assist state school districts and communities in implementing and maintaining interagency systems to make available early intervention services. And this is for children ages birth through 2 with disabilities. It's about $7.8 million and 6.6 FTEs.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as,
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Prawl, on special education, could you just restate what is the percentage that the federal government had initially committed? I believe it was 40%. And what percentage of special ed costs are we getting from the federal government to for the provision of the required services?
Madam Chair and Senator, I don't have that information with me. I can pull that out and get back to you later with that.
One of the things that also I would like to know, which I know you're not going to have, just in the back of your head, but it's always good to know as we look at these grants, and you've told they're for administration and other things. Of course, I really want to know how many students were served. And that is an important metric that we need to know on these grants, how many students were served. So just something going forward. Thank you. And then my question is, I think you mentioned an IT portal under Part C. What is the IT portal? I think it's on page 5. If you can just tell me a little bit more about that.
Oh. Okay. Madam Chair,
yes,
is this Part C, Migrant Ed?
I believe it's in migrant ed, yes.
I don't think it's in that section. Do you see it?
If Ms. Burnham, you don't have to look for it. Yeah. We'll get the answer later.
I can get some more information on
it. Yes, yes. Thank you so much. I believe our next is Ms. Snyder. Welcome to the committee. Oh, Bobby? Bobby, welcome
to Burnham.
The committee. Oh, I have my names mixed up.
That's okay.
Welcome to the committee, and thank you for introducing yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm going to quickly give you a brief review of the Race to the Top grant that we had for 4 years, and then give you an overview of our new preschool development grant. So as you know, we received a $45 million grant for the years 2012 through 2016. It was a cross-agency collaboration between departments of education, human services, and health. And the goal of that four-year opportunity was to statewide improvement of quality, access to quality, and the ability to make evidence-based policy decisions. So some of the main projects throughout that grant were focused on our quality rating system, Parent Aware, our early learning scholarship program. And we had a couple programs, such as the Title I Pre-K incentive and standards alignment, comprehensive assessment system development. We had two projects focused on the early childhood workforce. We had work focused on the kindergarten entry profile and our early learning data system, and some work done in the transformation zones around family, friend, and neighbor. The bolded projects are projects that we have been able to continue work on. And one of those is particularly focused on the early childhood longitudinal data system, which I'll get to. So a couple of the more important projects that were developed through Race to the Top, where we were able to revise our early childhood standards and create a document that is a comprehensive document for birth through age 5 instead of two separate documents. We were also able to really intentionally focus the development work around common standards at all levels. So thinking about the information that goes out to parents, the curriculum, the assessments, instruction, and teacher prep, those are all based on evidence-based standards for those primary audiences. And the work that was started in Race to the Top around workforce really allowed us to dig deeply into what the challenges were, other than an extreme workforce shortage in all areas of early childhood care and education. But Race to the Top really allowed us to gain a much more comprehensive picture of exactly what the needs are. And so we were able to continue that work post Race to the Top through a grant with the McKnight Foundation. So the Race to the Top work kind of evolved into what we now call the B8 Workforce Cross-Sector Team. And that is a public-private partnership between MDE, DHS, DEED, Children's Cabinet, the Early Learning Council, Child Care Aware, Think Small, and the Minnesota Initiative Foundations. And it's work based on the study completed by the National Academy of Sciences, Transforming the Workforce. And they have come up with a set of recommendations that as a state work group that's, again, cross-agency, we are looking to promote and implement. And those key recommendations include develop and enhance programs in institutions of higher ed for care and education professionals, strengthen practice-based field placements, including supervised induction, develop and implement a comprehensive timelines for transitioning to a minimum BA with specialized knowledge and competencies, collect and use early childhood data and connect it to child outcomes to inform stakeholders and policy decisions, and establish a backbone structure to oversee the implementation of this work. So right now, the money that is being used to fuel this work is a grant from McKnight, which ends at the end of December of this month. So we're kind of looking for a new home to manage the workforce work. Another really effective program that we were able to implement, develop, design, and implement through Races Hop was our Minnesota Early Childhood Longitudinal Data System. It links data from state departments of health, human services, and education. It was developed through two federally funded, mostly Race to the Top, but we also have an IES grant that ends as well this fall. All data on this site are de-identified before use. The data is aggregated, and numbers smaller than 10 are suppressed. And the system has been reviewed and approved for human protections by the IRB board. It has a governance body that makes decisions and sets protocols. And when the ECLDS team is out presenting, they always want to make sure that people understand what the system was designed to do and what it was not yet designed to do. So what it is, it's a resource for state and local planning. It's a source for understanding collective impact, and it gives data back to local programs to use. What it is not is a fraud prevention identification system, a data mining system, or it's not used for assessing performance of a specific program or site. So in the beginning, there is two research questions that the governance committee based all their work around. What do we know about children participating in Minnesota's early care and education programs? So we're able to look at the demographics, disability, program combinations. And what is the status of children after participating in early care and education programs? So we have special ed use and attendance in the early grades and third grade test scores. For the first time, we're also looking at, through the work of the second grant, the IES grant, we can see how families access multiple programs, the degree to which we are reaching targeted populations, and we look at certain populations of how children are doing in elementary school, such as children who participate in Part C, low birth weight, and maternal education at birth. We're also looking at the disparities within disparities to which we can give our attention. So there's ongoing work on the ECLDS, and that will be a continued focus of the work that we're doing in the preschool development grant.
Ms. Burnham, before you leave that, one question. On defining what it's not, it is not assessing performance of a specific program or site.
Right.
I just would like a little more information on that. We do want to know what works, and it looks like the ECLDS is not the measure of that. So just if you could kind of speak to that a little bit, why this is not measuring that, and where do we get our data on what's working as far as early childhood? Ms. Burnham.
Madam Chair, that is a great question, and one that I don't fully have the answer to. I believe it started back in the early years of Race to the Top with the governance committee, and what was then decided what the ECLDS would be able to do and not do. It's a matter of what data systems currently feed into the ECLDS, and we don't have all those data sets into the system to be able to tell where children go and what programs they attended. Now, is that a goal? As we all know from the OLA report, it certainly is a goal, and it's something that will be needed to be addressed by the governance body of the ECLDS. So that's kind of a work in progress, but it's also a process, from my understanding, and it might be better to have Anita Larson, who is the expert in this early childhood data system, come and address those types of questions. And so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Ms. Barnum. That is a key question. We live in a world of data, and we make data-driven decisions, and it's important for us to know what is working and what is not. So we'll follow up with Ms. Larson and see what she may have to say about that. But that's certainly an initiative of this committee, is to make sure that we are focusing our dollars, focused on students, but funding those things that work. So thank you.
Absolutely.
For that clarification. Ms. Burnham.
So now I'm going to dive into, so building off a lot
Ms. Burnham, just a minute. I missed a question here from one of my colleagues. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question, the ECLDS, does it interface with SLEDS?
I believe so. So, again, I can't confirm that. I should know that, but I'm having kind of a blank moment. I believe so, because the staff from SLEDS was integral in the design of the ECLDS. So I'm going to say yes, and if I'm inaccurate, we will get back to you right away. We actually want the two systems to live in the same place, so... I would definitely think that would, if it isn't already happening, is a goal.
Yeah.
Senator Claussen, did you have a follow-up?
Just a comment. It just seems logical that they would.
Yes.
And yet we're kind of naming them, you know, we've got two different acronyms here for the kind of the same purpose. So thanks you. And if you find out anything differently, just let us know. Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Wieger.
Yes, Madam Chair, it's my recollection talking with former Commissioner Pogemiller, who in higher ed was overseeing the SLEDs, that this part of it was called baby SLEDs, mm-hmm. and absolutely it needs to be integrated. And I totally agree with your earlier comments about the importance of measuring. We get at the 10 commitments to equity, and you know what matters is what you're measuring, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And gets to the heart of what the auditor said. So, you know, and we're putting together a budget.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Wieger. And then one final comment before you move on to the next segment is, can you just give us an example of what kind of data goes back to local programs for their use? Because there's another example where data could be very helpful going back to the local programs. What does that look like?
Madam
Chair.
Ms.
Burnham, yes.
That's another good question, and again, I think that's best addressed by Anita Larson. So I think I can speak to what we particularly do in my division, but it's not yet. So we can track, and I'm going to refer to Anita when she comes, because I don't want to give you misinformation.
Ms. Burnham, that's absolutely fine.
I apologize.
We'll delve into this deeper with the person who might be better able to answer that. So members, thank you for the good questions and comments. We'll try and go section by section and then take your questions after each section. Ms. Burnham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do think it'd be very beneficial to even see a demo of the early childhood data system and have Anita be able to explain everything it can do.
Thank you very much. We will do that because this will be a very focus of our committee.
Yes.
This year, so thank you. Please continue.
So now I'm going to just give an overview of the preschool development grant. And so this another cross-agency initiative led by the Children's Cabinet. And it's building off the work of several ongoing work groups, the Early Childhood System Reform Group, the work that we're doing around dual generation work, again, building off Race to the Top, and building off our B8 workforce work. And so through the Early Childhood Systems Reform work, which was a year and a half to going on 2-year process of bringing in a really diverse group of stakeholders and talking with them about how we as state agencies can better navigate or build our system, coordinate our systems to help them navigate the multiple programs that state systems offer. So in that work, they agreed upon a mission. And so it has been decided by the Children's Cabinet that most all early learning work will adopt that same mission. So that mission is, by focusing on children facing racial, geographic, and economic inequities, children in Minnesota will be born healthy and able to thrive within their families and communities. And as a goal of our preschool development work, which is, again, a cross-agency collaborative effort, the Minnesota Preschool Development Birth Through 5 grant and related activities will support the overall goal to more efficiently align and coordinate our systems in order to ease navigation through the systems for families. So some quick facts. This is a one-year planning grant. 45 states were awarded one of these one-year planning grants. Minnesota's award was $4,705,000. The timeline, it began December 31st of 18 and will end December 30th of 2019. You may be aware that Minnesota was asked if they'd be willing to reduce their original budget, and of course we were willing to do that, and every state who asked for over $1 million was asked to reduce their budget by 29%. So it wasn't that Minnesota was singled out. They just had so many, such high requests over the $250 million that they had that everybody was asked to reduce. This preschool development grant, there's the opportunity to apply for a three-year implementation grant, and that process will kind of overlap with the planning grant. The window that the feds are telling us is the initial information will be out in August, and the application will be due in October. It'll be a three-year grant. Again, it'll have a 30% state match, and you must have received a planning grant in order to be eligible for the implementation grant. So now I'm going to talk through each of the five activities. The feds divided the application and the grant requirements into five areas. Activities 1 through 5, which you can see on the slides. And there is a requirement that activities 1 and 2 need to be completed and approved by the Department of Health and Human Services before you can begin activities from activity 5. So that's just a note. So we learned through the work of the early child systems reform that authentic engagement with impacted communities is really the focus of our needs assessment and critical to developing a strategic plan. Minnesota is commonly at the top of state rankings of overall health, education, and economic outcomes, but underneath the surface lies deep disparities in well-being that fall primarily among racial lines, with African American and American Indian communities experiencing the most of these inequities. One recent study ranked Minnesota as having the second worst racial inequities in the nation in terms of employment and economic outcomes, and those inequities can be seen starkly in metrics of early childhood health and well-being. So our needs assessment process will build upon what we do know about the quality and availability of existing state programs and services, while simultaneously engaging families and communities in defining quality early care and education in a way that aligns with their cultural values and lived realities to inform a cross comparison of how our current array of programs and services meet those needs, where we need to bolster supports and services to better meet those needs, and where we might discontinue services because they aren't in alignment with communities' needs or are not working to decrease the disparities. So activity 1 is conducting a comprehensive statewide needs assessment. There's 3 requirements that the federal government has asked us to do. We are very confident and have the data to meet those requirements around availability and quality of existing programs, unduplicated number of children being served in existing programs and duplicated number of children on wait lists. So once we conduct the needs assessment and generate that data, we will put all the feedback together and generate a draft of a strategic plan. We are planning anywhere from 30 to 40 stakeholder engagement opportunities. We are contracting with regional partners who have specific knowledge of the cultural contexts in their regions. Those partners include the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, MINTREC, the Minnesota Women's Indian Resource Center, Children's Defense Fund, and Indigenous Visioning. So we are really reaching out to find the leaders in all these communities to help us facilitate these stakeholder engagement opportunities. In addition, in Activity 1, we will determine cross-agency and cross-program data sharing needs. So it's important to note that the OLA recommendations to align around aligning funding, eligibility, and application requirements is actually a work already in progress. We had started this work prior to applying for the preschool development grant. We have a team that, again, is cross-agency. It includes staff from MMB and staff from the Office of Continuous Improvement, and they are helping us identify what the steps are and what the needs are around what a common application should look like and how to align those eligibility criteria and funding streams. So we are also going to take this year and figure out data sharing agreements. We have money in the budget to possibly hire a data practices expert to look at the data sharing agreements across the three agencies and help us develop a set of recommendations that eliminate the challenges that currently exist for us to be able to share data across the agency, across the three agencies. The other piece of Activity 1 is around improving the quality rating and improvement system of parent-aware. We're looking at future directions, stakeholder engagement, identifying the next set of priorities, and the cost of implementing those priorities. And so Activity 2 is all about taking all that information we gathered in the needs assessment and developing a comprehensive birth through age 5 strategic plan for the state. We want to also, as we develop that, keep in mind that in the Children's Cabinet, in the work that we do across agency, we really define early care and education as birth through age 8. So although this work focuses on birth through age 5, we're going to make sure that we can build the work out to that learning continuum. Activity 3, design mixed delivery system. So this Activity 3 is to maximize parental choice and increase awareness of the state's mixed delivery system of existing programs and providers and promote increased parent involvement. So some of the action items for Activity 3 that we included in the application is inform the development and the needed components for the possible creation of a hub or a central intake system with that includes the single application process and build on existing plans to better coordinate referrals and connections to services. We hope to map out the most effective strategies to communicate with all parents, particularly those most vulnerable, including fathers and parents who speak a home language other than English, and expand the regional P3 leadership series, promoting mixed delivery, cultural relevant parent involvement activities, and early childhood care and education partnerships and transitions. Activity 4 is sharing best practices among early childhood providers and improve transitions. So the action items that were included in the application for Activity 4 include improve and expand training on trauma-informed care, which was called out in the application, develop a curriculum and toolkit on trauma-informed care designed for tribal and stakeholder involvement, develop a communities of practice model to strengthen opportunities for face-to-face interaction, best practice exchange and professional development within communities and across regions, enhance relationship-based professional development system, design a system of supports and reflective supervision for coaches and mentors, improve the training system by reviewing and revising how we review and approve training, provide cultural competence training to early care and education leaders, school superintendents and elementary school principals, state agency leaders, state leaders and key leaders in early childhood organizations, build state capacity to support dual language learners by amending our current WIDA contract to be inclusive of their early years program. And then we are working to increase the cadre of trainers for the kindergarten entry profile, as well as developing an online training module to provide training and develop a transition profile to go along with the KEP so it can be a tool to be used within communities to help community programs better, or not better, but partner with elementary schools to ease the transition for families and children. And then the last action item is to improve early childhood workforce. And the sub-activities are in this area include we are going to articulate competencies of early care and education teacher and provider needs in order to use the trauma-informed practices, be culturally responsible and support dual language learners, and support institutions of higher ed as they embed their revised competencies. We're going to create criteria and recommendations for support for high-quality practicum sites and design materials and create and implement the initial phase of a recruitment plan to draw people to the field and ensure the population of educators reflect the diversity of the communities. Now, we have a couple things in Activity 5, remembering that we can't start these until we have our needs assessment and strategic plan approved. So the couple items in Activity 5 will directly relate to the results of the needs assessment and will be focused on implementing evidence-based practices that meet ESSA requirements, improve professional development offerings, incorporate trauma-informed approaches, and better consumer information systems to support parents in their decision-making. So we currently have a menu of evidence-based practices that was developed for ESSA, albeit that it's mainly focused on K-12. We have a early childhood menu started, which we developed for our Striving Readers literacy work. So we do have some early literacy components. And then we will also implement some regional professional learning and quality improvement opportunities once we know what's identified in the needs assessment. This work, again, is going to be kind of a co-creation and a work in progress with these partners that I mentioned who we will be working with throughout the state in each of the regions. And this is kind of hard to see, but it's the visual that defines the roles and responsibilities of all those participating in the implementation of the preschool development grant. And if you'd like more information, we've got a link on our webpage, and we do have a preschool development grant project manager that lives at MDE.
Thank you, Ms. Burnham. I'm sure we will have more questions. I have thank you for the contact, so we can go directly there. But I just have two very general questions on the early childhood, the preschool development grant. So if I understand it correctly, what you are describing, a pretty in-depth process, is what you are doing with the one-year planning grant money. Is that correct?
Yes.
So $4.75 million, but how many kids did that serve? How many additional students are getting high-quality early learning with this $4.7 million?
So Madam Chair, the intent of this grant was not to serve more students. That was clearly articulated from the U.S. Department of Human Services. This grant was to purely support states in designing and implementing a comprehensive birth through age five system to be able to serve more children, to better coordinate programs for the to help families navigate on an easier basis. So it was purely a planning grant. It wasn't meant to serve more children.
Thank you. And then is there also a three-year implementation grant that is going to, is that an additional award from the federal government to implement?
So that is kind of phase two, Madam Chair, sorry. That is phase two, and that opportunity will present itself in August of 2019. So the information will be hopefully out in August, and the application for that implementation grant will be due in October of 2019. So basically, we will write our phase two application to implement the strategic plan that we develop.
So, Ms. Burnham, before we serve any children, we'll need to get this next grant. And does the implementation grant provide for service to children?
Yes, I believe, Madam Chair, I believe so.
Okay. Thank you.
Those are much more competitive grants with a much higher dollar value.
Okay, and then one last brief question, because I know there's been a lot of planning, but the needs assessment isn't in yet. I just want to have you tell me a little bit about, we have a pretty robust preschool model in Minnesota right now. Actually, it's called the Minnesota model, and many other states are actually copying what we're doing right here in Minnesota. And I just want to know, how is that reflected in the work that you've done here? Ms. Burnham.
Madam Chair, so all current programs, including the Early Learning Scholarship model, the Voluntary Pre-K model, the Parent Aware model, and the Home Visiting model, all services, all programs that the state implements birth through age five will be part of the conversation. So it's how can we better coordinate all those services and all those programs? How can we make it easier for families to navigate and make sure that they get the services and the programs that they, number one, choose, because the priority of this grant is parental choice. So that'll be part of the conversation we have with communities.
Okay, great. So, thank you very much. And just one last calendar deadline. When will that be again? When the planning grant will be hopefully awarded an implementation grant. What is the deadline on that? Or when do you expect those awards to be made, or the competition to cease and the awards to be determined?
Sure. Madam Chair, we anticipate that the federal government will release information in August of 2019 and that the application will be due in October of 2019 for the implementation grants.
Thank you very much. I see Senator Wieger has a question. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you remind me what was the McKnight Foundation grant? What was the amount given by McKnight Foundation for the $45 million project?
Ms. Burnham.
For the Improve the Early Learning Experience project. What was the McKnight Foundation grant? Could you remind me the amount of money?
Madam Chair, yes, Senator, so the McKnight money was not part of the Race to the Top, not part of the $45 million. So the McKnight money came into play after Race to the Top ended to support the continued work around the B8 workforce group. And I can't, it was just like a small grant, and I'm thinking like $100,000, and it paid for a facilitator of the B8 workforce group.
Thank you. Madam Chair,
Ms. Torres Ray.
I appreciate this presentation and the opportunity. You know, as I recall my years of conversations about what we need to do in order to bring kind of the agencies to talk and understand kind of how these issues work, how we need to collaborate, how do we need to collect data to really understand how do we support children around the state of Minnesota. We even created a department just for that reason several years ago, that later it was restructured again. So we've put a tremendous amount of money, a tremendous amount of effort into understanding, ultimately, what do we need to do in order to understand the experiences of families and children and how they are being served. The auditor's report actually indicate that we have more duplication than we have ever had, that we have less understanding of how this system works, and that families have less access, that we have a problem in rural Minnesota, that we have a problem with low-income families in communities of color. So we know a lot more. And my question to you is, you know, after an investment of $45 million, a lot more from philanthropy, because a lot of foundations have invested, Bush Foundation have invested in this, Minneapolis Foundation have invested. How much more do we need to know in order to put a practical plan to serve young children and have a fully funded system in place?
Senator Torres-Ray, an astounding question, a great question. Ms. Burnham.
Madam Chair, Senator, I agree. It is a great question. And this preschool development grant presented itself, and we agreed as a children's cabinet and the leaders across multiple agencies that we would apply and take advantage of the opportunity that to do some very intentional, targeted stakeholder engagement and to hear from families and providers and educators and community leaders about what their needs are today. And we also recognize that the disparities around communities of color and American Indian population, and those are the areas that we are definitely going to focus on and get direct feedback from them about what, as a state system, we can do to support them. So that's not a direct answer to your question. I can only speak to what I'm involved in. I realize that the Race to the Top work had some similar goals. And again, we need to turn the dial on the disparities in Minnesota. And so we took advantage of this opportunity, and we are going to do a comprehensive needs assessment and get a plan on paper that's submitted to the feds that's going to hold our feet to the fire and hopefully be involve your input in ensure that you are part of those community conversations and part of that plan development.
Any further comments? Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Ms. Burnham, as you develop and roll out the plan, could you keep the legislative auditor aware of the progress, because it was such an important report, and we're all rooting for you, but it's a big challenge. But keeping them apprised, too, and because you had agreed to a number, I think, to all their recommendations and the response, that'd be the first thing. And the nod of the head indicates yes.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Burnham.
Senator Wieger, absolutely. I've already been in contact with Jody Hauer several times, because we are working on this data sharing challenge together. And we, like I mentioned earlier, we're very intentional to have all of these recommendations at the front of our thinking around how we designed this application and these activities. So our goal is to meet these recommendations head on, every one of them. So this is going to be a planning year, a development year. We put $1 million into the IT budget so they can help us design what data systems are going to be needed or revised or upgraded, what data sharing agreements need to be revised. So those were definitely on our priority to meet those recommendations.
Senator Wieger, follow up.
Yes, and Madam Chair, I know we'll have more hearings. And as you know, for the 350,000 or so 0 to 5, one of the top
priorities in the state identified by parents is accessibility to daycare and or high-quality daycare, affordable daycare, and education occurs as well, depending on how you measure it. How will, and there's separate legislation addressing this, but for parents, how might you integrate that need for young kids, you know, toddlers, infants in Minnesota in your recommendations?
Ms. Burnham.
Madam Chair, Senator, so again, cross-agency, including myself, who wouldn't typically be viewed as a 0-3 expert, but we have been sitting, all of us, all state leaders, with the Children's Cabinet at multiple 0-3 convenings. And we hear what their needs are, we hear what the state needs are, and I can guarantee you that this plan will address infants and toddlers, this strategic plan. I mean, so we are really working hard across state systems to really be thoughtful and intentional around a 0-8 comprehensive system. So this strategic plan will be inclusive of infants and toddlers, and part of that stakeholder engagement is hearing from those parents, because DHS is going to be sitting at the table, health is going to be sitting at the table, and education is going to be sitting at the table, and we're going to work together and get it figured out.
Thank you, Director Burnham. Just one question. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around a $4.7 million spent in 1 year, and I just want to know, what is that money being spent on? So we've got some great plans here. You're waiting for the needs assessment to come in. But I just want to know, what's the budget for spending $4.7 million to plan this model? Give me some examples.
So, Madam Chair,
Director.
I would be happy to send you this chart I have. It has each activity with the budget amount, the lead agency, and the lead contact person. But to give you some examples, activities 1 and 2 are budgeted at about $750,000. The community engagement piece will be about $500,000. Those are going to be in contracts to our regional partners, as well as different ways to incentivize participation in the stakeholder engagement. And then there's the writing and the information summary of the strategic plan. And the review of the data practices, if we had to hire a lawyer, we estimated that cost at around $200,000. And we had some smaller amounts to improve the quality rating improvement system at $50,000. Activity 3 around enhancing our mapping out a statewide communication strategy, again, would be contracting with some communication PR firms. So that was estimated at $200,000. We have $75,000 budgeted for the expansion of the P3 Leadership Series, promoting mixed delivery and culturally relevant parent involvement activities and partnerships. And then activity 4 has lots of smaller amounts. One of the developing the trauma-informed curriculum and training was estimated at $200,000. And the cultural competence training was estimated at about $76,000. The partnership we have with WIDA in their early years component was at $315,000. Increasing the cadre of trainers and the work around the KEP was at $100,000.
Director, if you will send that,
sure.
That would be wonderful. But I would just say that I still can't quite understand because we already have the Children's Cabinet. So is this hiring new people? I understand attorney's fees. I definitely understand perhaps some costs in making sure that stakeholders show up at these things. But I still, you know, think it's an incredible amount of money. And we're not touching one child. And so I just,
It's just a lot of money to just plan when we have done so much already. Not that we don't need more planning, but we have experts in ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, right here from Minnesota. Dr. Robert Anda developed that concept from the University of Minnesota. So I just have to state that I'm just extremely concerned to hear that we have spent we will spend $4.7 million, and my concern is, are we reinventing the wheel? Are we looking at reinventing things that we're already doing here in Minnesota? Now, maybe the needs assessment, which isn't in yet, will tell you that. But again, it's an incredible amount of money, and I'll look forward to seeing the budget that you send over. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions, comments on the preschool grant? Well, Director, you can tell that this committee, as we are very much interested in those early learners, making sure that all kids enter kindergarten ready to learn. So, but continue with your,
you.
I think you're on to the school climate transformation grant, perhaps. Is that the next section?
Correct.
Yes. And please introduce yourself for the tape. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Caitlin Snyder, Government Relations at Minnesota Department of Education. So switching topics a little bit, we're going to talk about the School Climate Transformation Grant. So this is a grant that the Department of Education receives to enhance MDEs and Minnesota school capacity to implement a multi-tiered system of support for improving behavioral outcomes and learning conditions for all students. So ESSER requires that all schools who receive federal money develop plans for reducing bullying, harassment, and discipline that remove students from the classroom. So the grant is focused on learning conditions and student discipline and identifying the leading contributors to poor school attendance and dropout. So at the state level, the Minnesota School Safe and Supportive Schools Act also directs districts to implement a comprehensive approach to reducing bullying and harassment. MDE has four implementation approaches with this grant. We're working to enhance the capacity of the department and the regional centers for excellence staff through ongoing professional development. We're providing targeted and comprehensive support to schools identified in the North Star accountability system through training and technical assistance. This is largely focused on our comprehensive support schools, the 200 schools identified through the North Star accountability system. We're also supporting districts' continuous improvement efforts of their multi-tiered systems of support. And we're providing statewide support for Minnesota schools by providing one set of school climate improvement resources and through strategic partnerships, training, and technical assistance. Some of the sample project activities that are occurring with this grant to date, there was a partnership with the Bemidji, Red Lake, Cass Lake, Bena, and Black Duck school districts in Bugo-Najishig School to pilot MDE's social and emotional learning and restorative practices implementation guidance. Oh, pardon me. So you'll notice Bugo-Najishig, so BIE schools are subject to ESSER requirements as well, so they're also required to have this similar training. So we're planning to launch in March a supportive discipline community of practice for district leaders. And then we're working on planning a professional development series for district directors of teaching and learning staff, student supports, principals, and union leads on guided discipline and student support in the classroom. We're working on developing 5 regional restorative practices trainings and convening an MDE cross-division team to begin work on approach 4, so supporting our identified school districts with this work. Striving Readers Comprehensive Literacy Grant. This is a grant that's just north of $21 million that was awarded to Minnesota in late 2017. This is allocated to 36 subgrantee sites across the state through a competitive process. The grants are between $250,000 and $900,000, depending on the size of the site, and this funds 1 to 3 FTE literacy coach positions at each site. This grant is focused on advancing literacy skills, including pre-literacy skills, reading and writing, with an emphasis on disadvantaged students, including children living in poverty, our English learners, and children with disabilities. There was a second round of grants that was awarded in September 2018 that was just south of $300,000 in Minnesota. This supports sites with 2-day summer leadership academy training and leadership in reading network. School year training in partnership with the Minnesota Reading Association and other state partners, as well as professional development for coaches and principals. The goals of the grant are to develop a site improvement plan that includes coaching and literacy goals and developing a professional learning system to strengthen teachers' competent use of literacy, evidence-based practices, and culturally sustaining pedagogy. The next slide shows the 36 sites across the state, and they're focused at different age ranges. So each of the schools, districts or schools that are were awarded grants is listed on the side there. So the department is working to support subgrantees to build infrastructure and capacity in order to implement and sustain identified evidence-based literacy practices. So the subgrantees will develop sustainable processes and supports to maintain and build upon these results. The department will support local literacy coaches who in turn support educators and families at each subgrantee site. As a result of the effective use of local literacy coaches and increasing fidelity to identified evidence-based practices, the subgrantees will demonstrate improved student outcomes in literacy. The 2017 Charter School Program Grant, this was awarded to the department in 2017. The federal purpose is to increase national understanding of the charter school model by expanding the number of high-quality charter schools available to students by providing financial assistance for the planning, program design, and initial implementation of charter schools. It's also focused on evaluating the effects of charter schools, including their effects on students, student academic achievement, staff, and parents. So in Minnesota, our objectives with the charter school grant is to increase the number of high-quality charter schools that serve disadvantaged students and the overall number of students served by charter schools in Minnesota. We're also working with charter schools to support the implementation and achieving the goals of Minnesota's World's Best Workforce plans with charters and increasing the quality of Minnesota charter schools through authorizer training and evaluation. We're also focused on the increased sustainability of Minnesota's charter schools. So this grant that was awarded is a five-year grant just south of $39 million. The vast majority of these funds go to developing and expanding or replicating grants. So this should fund up to 55 sub-grants awards at an average of 3 years for $600,000 to opening or replicating charter schools. 7% of the funds will be used for technical assistance to authorizers and charter schools, including the Minnesota Authorizer Performance Evaluation System. You might have heard this referred to as MAPES. This is the Authorizer Evaluation Support System. Data analytics and program staff, board training grant, and charter school leader educational program projects. A lot of our charter schools are smaller, and they don't have the same level of supports in this way, and so this provides an opportunity for the charter schools to get that support. And then 3% is used for administrative costs at the Minnesota Department of Education. That includes grant services staff, that includes indirect costs and rent. And our last grant of the day is the disaggregating student data. So this is known as the D2 grant at the federal level. This is just south of $2 million that was awarded. So there were changes to the student accountability system under Minnesota Statutes 120B.35 in 2016. So to support that work, the department sought and secured a federal grant to support that work. So the work has two main prongs. So the one prong is working with stakeholders about what this data collection should look like, how it would be culturally relevant and respect the data privacy concerns of parents. And then the other prong of the work is focused on IT logistics and how do we collect and report this data. So we've been working with stakeholders, including parents, partner schools, and districts, developing a webpage that includes quarterly or monthly updates on what the development looks like. We've worked with over 50 districts to be onboarded to EDFI, which is the data system that will collect this information in the 2019-2020 school year. As of last Friday, I believe that number was up to 59, so we're very close to hitting 60 districts. We're working with our EDFI implementation vendor, Double Line, to develop this system, who is in turn working with the student information system vendors. So each school district has a student information vendor that collects the information that gets reported to MDE. So it's sort of this secondary step. They have their own vendor that submits their information to the MDE portal. We are working directly with MDE program area staff whose program data will be collected using EDFI in 2018-19 and 2019-20. and funding to staff, our project manager, technical support for submission and communication. So what this looks like is that in order to collect this increased data under data disaggregation, the increased ethnicity information, MDE worked and sought a federal grant to support the implementation of the IT system that can collect this information. This EDFI system will also create more streamlined data process submissions for districts by simplifying the validation of data, and it will also allow the long-term plan more coordination of data. So, for example, anyone on the committee who's ever asked information about how many students of a certain ethnicity are in an APIB course have probably run into roadblocks about getting that data. That's because there's a data information system for our student demographic data called MARS, and then there's a data system for our rigorous course taking for our APIB courses, and they don't speak together very well. So this grant will help support a data system that will help coordinate these data systems so that you can get better information across platforms. Coming back to the data, some of the common themes that we've been working on with this grant are talking about the sensitivity of the data that we're collecting with stakeholders and community leaders, making sure that we're limiting access to data to a select group of individuals, ensuring and maintaining security of data, and ensuring that communication is frequent and transparent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that's the end of your presentation. I want to just comment on the, particularly on the reading section. I appreciate the fact that you are seeking data to see if students have actually improved in their literacy skills, and that you're looking at evidence-based literacy practice. So I think those are great things. And just to note, members, you do have a spreadsheet in your packet that lists the school districts and the amount of federal funds that your district is receiving. There's also an average per student amount as well. And we can see that there's a significant amount of work going on here, a significant amount of funds, and it's important that the legislature see what those are. So I appreciate the fact that you have presented today. I often wish the legislature had more oversight and input on how those federal dollars are used, but I absolutely appreciate what you have shown us here today. I'll see if there are any other questions or comments from members. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with you. There's a lot of money being spent. There's a lot of activities that are going on. I'm really concerned with outcomes. Mm-hmm. What are our expectations here? What goals have we set ahead of time that we can measure through some metric that this is really going to make a difference?
Mm-hmm. Would anyone like to take that on? A question. A very good question.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Ms. Snyder.
Thank you. And Senator Claussen, I think it really, that's always something that should be central to our work. How is this supporting students? How are we measuring our best outcomes? It depends on which grant that we're talking about. So I think that there's a very clear answer when we're talking about the Striving Readers grant versus the Disaggregating Data grant, right? The Disaggregating Data grant is focused on building an IT system so that we can get this information and then provide that to the legislature so they can make their best informed decisions. So that that first round of data that we'll collect from that federal grant will not be available until sometime this spring, potentially this summer, depending on how well everything is implemented. But you're right that always needs to be a focus, central theme of what we're doing.
Senator Claussen, follow up.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I looked at the title programs, and I'm familiar with those, and they're very general outcomes, and I guess as we apply for these grants in the future and the current ones, I'd really like to see more specifics on what do we really expect? What outcomes do we, what needles, what metrics do we expect that we're going to move the dial on some of our outcomes, on the opportunity gap in some of these things? We go through the activity, the process, but what are we really expecting on the end, and we really have we identified goals specifically that we want to accomplish? And I think I'd really like to see more of that information so that when we go into these activities, that we have a clear idea of what we are expecting on the outcomes.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. That's a message you'll hear around this table. We are focused on students and funding what works. We need to see those outcomes, and we will be delving more into that. So thank you, Senator Claussen. Further comments? I just have a couple brief questions. I don't want to extend too long, but also, members, on your table of the federal grants, I do want you to know that off to the right side, I had asked for the number of full-time equivalents or full-time employees that those federal grants were funding, and so you have that data. And I just had a couple questions on that regard. Are all the FTEs funded with federal dollars? So what we're seeing on in this table is the different federal grants, the FTEs working those grants. And I just want to know, are they all funded with federal dollars? Director Prahl, could you answer that?
Madam Chair, this is... Most of these FTEs are funded from multiple sources, so they could be it could be funded from some title, from some special ed, and some state funds as well. Or, so this is, yes, they could be funded from multiple sources. It isn't just federal funding.
So Ms. Prahl, so I remember as a Title I teacher, all of these funds had to be attributed to the source. And so does the department do that with FTEs? Does the department then attribute funding sources for each FTE so that we are assured that the FTE that is being funded by a particular source is actually doing the work that is required? What's the department's mechanism for tracking that, similar to what we do in our schools, for example?
Madam Chair, I think you're talking about time reporting. Is that what it is?
Yes.
So, yes, we do have a system in place, and actually we've worked with the auditors on it before because we want to make sure we're in line with it. But, yes, so we, every pay period, employees have to list the time that they're spending on each one of their grants. For example, the staff in my unit work, they support all these grants, so they have like 10 or 15 different funding strings. So they're counting the amount of time and hours they're spending on each grant, as do the staff in the program.
Thank you very for that clarity. And then what percent of all MDE FTEs are federally funded? So you might, again, that might be difficult, but it's something that would help us if you could help with that information. Do you have it today?
I do,
Madam
Chair.
Wonderful.
It's approximately
Director.
55% federal and 45% state, approximately.
Great.
And like you said, that I mean, it does fluctuate, but that's approximately.
Terrific. And then what is the role of those 55 FTEs that are in the food and nutrition program? That was one of the first ones that we talked about. And it was just because it's a pass-through directly to our schools, as I understand it. And so I was just wondering, what do 55 FTEs do in that school and nutrition program? Director.
Madam Chair, I know they have a large audit component, so they have to review all of the counts or all the reimbursements that come in, make sure that they're eligible. So they're doing site visits. They're doing technical assistance training on the different programs. That's a big component of it. There's also the managing of the grants, but most of it, I believe, or a good chunk of it, is out in auditing.
Thank you. I want to thank the department. I know you had to do a lot of work to get us the information that we're seeking here, and you can tell we still have more questions. Members, I don't see any other comments or questions. I want to thank you for your time. I think this is an important topic for us to be aware of because it doesn't, it's sometimes if we don't seek out this information, then we don't have a way of knowing that. So thank you for bringing that. Thank you, members and our guests. Our next meeting is on Friday, the 25th. It's an important committee hearing. It's on PTAC, which is a wonderful initiative with our high schools, community colleges, and career tech, our businesses. It's a great partnership. I've had high success in other states. We'd like to see about that in Minnesota. So with that, we're adjourned until Friday, January 25th. Thank you.